The fall movie season is in full swing, a time when most distributors roll out their prestige pictures, holiday tent poles, and high-quality smaller films, all looking to build momentum into the obligatory end-of-year best-of lists and coming film awards season. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Today we look at two very different films vying for our attention, one a fantasy built upon the world of Harry Potter, and the other a very real and intimate coming-of-age film. Joining me to discuss Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and Moonlight, I'm happy to have back on the program frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. Good morning, Kyle.
Morning, Chuck. Happy to be back.
It's the holiday season already with Thanksgiving. A lot of big stuff coming out. One of the biggest, most anticipated tent poles, at least, is J.K. Rowling's screen debut as a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This is an expansion of the Harry Potter series. It's not a sequel. It's not a prequel. It is being marketed as a spinoff. They even tie it into the corporate synergy of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. The film stars Eddie Redmayne as a zoologist named Newt Scamander traveling to New York for somewhat ill-defined purposes. There he meets a nomage that is an American term for muggle. It's not as elegant as it is in the British counterpart. The nomage is played by Dan Fogler. They get a simple mix-up with their suitcases. Fogler's suitcase has pastries and Redmayne's has insane creatures, spectacular design, and the creatures get out and mayhem ensues. That's as much as I want to go into the plot because there's a lot of plot.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue even too much plot.
Yeah.
One of the nice things about the Potter series is that Steve Kloves adapted all those books, and here I believe that script could have used a polish because the ideas that she has, which are very good, you know, there's elements of the temperance movement, there's overarching themes of intolerance, there's even, you could argue, bits of anti-Semitism and the response to that. But she spends too much time plotting over those things, and it ends up muddling up the picture. The film also stars Colin Farrell, John Voight, Ezra Miller, and the great Samantha Morton in supporting roles. I'm mixed about it. As a Potter fan, there's a lot that I enjoyed about it, but as someone who likes focused movies, I found myself drawn out of the plot way too many times. And I also grew tired of Redmayne's performance. The little quirks that he brings to it just sort of killed it for me. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'm not an immediate Harry Potter fan, though I did like the last four films in that series. That's when I thought it really got interesting. And they were interestingly all directed by David Yates, who directs this film.
Yes.
And I think he does juggle all of the things you just mentioned. It is a fulsome picture, crammed, packed with ideas. Part of that, I think, is the problem of this kind of franchise where studios now are not looking at individual films. They're looking at what they're building for the next 10 years, and we will get 10 more years of this franchise.
Five pictures, I believe.
So it really is laden down with a lot of character introductions, a lot of re-describing the world we're in, how things work, because we have wizards and magic and these creatures you mentioned and what their purpose is and how everything interrelates. So the film has to shoulder a lot to do to set up presumably what I think is already in pre-production, the next four films.
Yeah.
and if they do well, probably beyond that. You know, it's really becoming harder for me, I think, to evaluate these kinds of films for that reason, just because they're not standalone films anymore. They have so much weight on them from the studio. And it's interesting, Warner Brothers going this route, trying to tap back into the money juggernaut that was Harry Potter, particularly since their DC comic book franchise is sputtering a bit, to put it lightly. Superman and Batman are not bringing in the kind of money they want, and so they'll have this as a fallback.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, is that, you know, when you sort of look at the nuts and bolts of the film, it's incredibly well made. The visual effects are fantastic. The costumes by Colleen Atwood are just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's a period piece.
Yeah.
Beautiful New York, lots of detail.
Art Deco set in the, I believe, 1929.
I think I enjoyed it a little more than you because I had no expectations. I was not a Potter fan. I wasn't going to see a Potter film. And it's not even a prequel, but it's set many decades in the past from the goings-on of Harry Potter's world. It is set in America, but you know, I was driving home thinking, you know, what was refreshing to me about this film was we've become so steeped in particularly the Marvel universe and the aesthetic of that universe. And it was just nice to see a large sprawling film like that at the same level, but with a very different aesthetic feel to it.
True. Although it sort of makes you sort of miss you know, the Potter films, especially the last four films, they had a lot of quieter and more intimate moments. Yep. And this film, I felt, with the exception of Dan Fogler's character, a lot of those quiet moments were missing for me.
Do you think as it goes forward, though, they'll start pulling that apart? Or the fact that J.K. Rowling is so involved with this and is used to building these gigantic books, these novels that are so heavy with detail,
do you think
they'll keep her on for that?
I'd hope so. I mean, it'd be very nice if, you know, they considered punting it to another screenwriter, an experienced screenwriter who knows how to sort of distill huge ideas into something a little more compact. But I don't think anyone's going to read it.
I do hope they keep David Yates, the director, though, because he has shown an affinity for pulling off smoothly just all of this wealth of information and without it feeling like you're being fed from a fire hose.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's a lot of detail in this film that I'm sure I missed that on a second viewing. But a lot of fans in the audience, I saw a number of kids actually wearing Harry Potter costumes. So I was a little surprised by that, since it really is not a direct sequel or prequel to Harry Potter.
Yeah. It should say that there are connections between the films.
Yes.
And there is one character in particular who we can't even talk about because the actor attached to it is a spoiler unto itself. But I think as the films go on, you'll find out that there will be deeper connections to the Potter universe.
Right. Well, deeper connections abound in the other film we're looking at, which is a very small film, completely opposite of fantasy. This is deeply rooted in reality. And I was thinking that sometimes big things come in small packages, and that's certainly the case with Moonlight. It's an intimate film about a quiet boy named Sharon, who walks through the world knowing there's something about him that's different, and those around him know he's different as well. It's a film about the expectations of community and trying to fit in, as well as the long struggle to accept who you are, and in this case, the struggle of a young African-American boy coming to the awareness that he's gay, and the community around him knows that fact as well. But it's about so much more, this film. It's just gorgeous to look at. It has perhaps the finest ensemble cast I've seen this year in a film. And the film spans 20 years in the life of its central character, Sharon, who we first meet when he's 9, and then again in high school, and finally in his 20s. He's played by 3 very talented actors. The story is set in a challenging environmental working-class community in Miami, where opportunities are slim, and the pressure to fit in to the very narrow definition of masculinity comes from a lot of directions. It describes confidently in just enough detail that we can follow the arc of Sharon's life and those around him, despite the decade-long jumps in the story. The writer-director, Barry Jenkins, is somebody to keep an eye out for, I think, here. He's really distilled so much into this deceptively intimate story. With simple details, he more than sketches out. We see Sharon's loneliness and otherness within a community that itself is isolated from the wider world, his mother's struggle to make ends meet as a nurse, and her descent into addiction, the incessant bullying that Sharon faces and how it causes him later in life to hide behind a mask of muscle and gold. It's a story of a boy becoming a man, exploring friendship and betrayal. The majority of its running time is given to quiet moments between pairings of characters stripped of posturing and being agonizingly real with each other. Just about the best ensemble, as I said, that I've seen, and the way they interact on screen is just marvelous. Barry Jenkins, the director, also wrote this film. And what's so affecting to me about Moonlight is all the ways in which it never wavers from the humanity of its characters. This is truly a film that quietly challenges and often upends our own screen memories of so many depictions of urban black communities. While these characters do live in a world of financial struggle, drugs and crime, a world of hopelessness and violence that we think we know from television movies, Moonlight gives us something unexpected, a universal film about human beings coping with life. The joy is in the telling and the watching in this film, as hard as it may be from time to time. Moonlight is a small film that turns its smallness into a powerful asset and will touch viewers in a big way. Obviously, I liked it.
Yeah, and I loved it too. I remember there's very few movies that, you know, when the end credits roll, that you just sort of sit there stunned by what you saw. And that was my reaction to Moonlight. I thought it's questions of identity and sexuality and race and fitting into a community where you know you don't fit in were sort of just pitch perfect and executed in the best way possible. For me personally, I enjoyed seeing, and it's very awful to say that I enjoyed seeing it, but seeing the evolution of Naomi Harris's character, Paula,
the mother,
from a nurse starting off as experimenting with drugs, and then to full on addiction, and then
recovery.
In an interview, Harris was saying that she likened it to being in an abusive relationship, and I think she does a very good job of it. And one of the nice things about her performance is that she filmed it in 3 days, her entire role.
Wow.
In between the press tour for another film she's known for, Spectre, in the James Bond series.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's amazing that, you know, an actress of that caliber can turn in such an intense and raw performance, which certainly wasn't shot in sequence.
Right.
In such a short period of time.
And the film is just chock full of those amazing performances. Marisola Ali, who plays a drug dealer, but unlike just about any drug dealer we've ever seen on screen, he has there's a tenderness at the core of it. We get past all that posturing and the masks that people wear on the street, and he takes this young boy under his wing when he's being bullied. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give anything away, but there are so many amazing tender moments. And he and his girlfriend are a depiction within this world, this broken world, of a relationship that's actually working and is nurturing. It's really a fascinating film in the way it challenges so much of our prejudices that have been fed by our own media. Mm-hmm. And what we consume television-wise.
Yes.
For me, it really is a universal story. To say that it's a black boy coming to terms with his gayness really does the film a disservice. This is such a universally beautiful film, a challenging film nonetheless, but the way it's shot, the score by Nicholas Britell, mm-hmm. who did 12 Years a Slave and Whiplash, it has a sort of a classicalness to it that the whole venture is elevated to a classical level, mm-hmm. that I think for cinephiles, regardless of the subject matter, you just come away thrilled at having seen a film that's such a piece.
Yeah.
Everything is working together and on beat.
It's interesting that you bring up the score, because I remember the first third of the film, when the score is probably its most beautiful, and it's beautiful in other parts of it, but in the beginning, I remember thinking it felt almost like a Terrence Malick film, sort of capturing...
Yes.
Sharon has a rough childhood, but they're still finding beauty in those very small moments, either with his friends or with Ali's character.
And the way the camera glides around that environment that they're in, and around them, it often circles them, giving us the full 360. I think it's full of the kinds of moments you were hoping would be in Fantastic Beasts.
Yes.
So this is where they ended up, in a very different film. And we should mention that at the time of this taping, one of the difficulties with small films is they don't always get held over. So we're still in the dark about whether it will be playing this weekend. I hope it will be somewhere. Keep your eyes out. You're going to see this with a lot of awards nominations and best of year end list. So I think if it's not out this weekend, it will be back. Last minute choices, anything else out that you can highly recommend?
You know, as much as I love Moonlight, I don't think I want to call it my favorite film of the year. My favorite film is, of course, you know, me, big sci-fi nerd, Arrival. Stars Amy Adams as a linguist who is called upon by Forrest Whitaker to make contact with an alien spaceship, one of 12 that has landed on Earth. And for me, I think it's one of the greats. I really do. And I don't say that lightly. I think it stands up there with Contact in 2001 and Solaris, the original. But I think there's a lot to enjoy. It's directed by Denis Villeneuve, who directed Sicario and Prisoners and Incendies. And if anything, other than the fact that this is a great movie, this gives reassurance to the fact that his next film, Blade Runner 2049, it shows that it is in good hands.
Since we just talked about Moonlight, there's so many great films being made right now by and about African-Americans. One that I saw that's already out on Blu-ray, Miles Ahead, Don Cheadle's film, where he plays Miles Davis late in life. Highly recommended. Kyle, always great to see you. Keep watching.
Thanks. We'll catch a movie this weekend.
I hope so. My guest today has been frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.